Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with two women passionate about the science and nature of creativity and its enhancement of our lives. Brooke Campbell is a licensed creative arts therapist, registered drama therapist, board certified trainer, professional actor, director and writer, and founder of Creative Connections. She was named New Jersey's favorite kids doc in the category of psychotherapy 2013 to 2015. Brooke has extensive experience working with autism, mental illness, trauma, women's issues, parenting topics, eating disorders, children, elderly, and individuals who have suffered from various forms of abuse. Brooke holds a master's in drama therapy from New York University. She resides in New Jersey. Maria Hodomarska is the acting director of the NYU program in drama therapy. She has been a practicing drama therapist for over 25 years and has taught drama therapy internationally. Among the many courses she teaches at NYU, Maria teaches a course on play to undergraduate students. Her current clinical work and research focuses on how play can build relationships in communities where conflict, marginalization, and oppression result in political and interpersonal stagnation and terror. Through play, we give order, rhythm, interpersonal, and even spiritual meaning to life. Our most important and perhaps undervalued work in life is play. So welcome, Brooke and Maria.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
I'd like you to tell me a little bit about your journeys to your present incarnation and your interest in this subject. So, Brooke?
When I think about it, I reflect on my past. As a child, I was really involved in the creative arts, like visual arts and dancing and acting. And I really grew up in a very rural nature-like environment. And I feel like all those components really allowed me to feel most myself. And then in my young adulthood, I became a professional actor and trained. And what I found that I was most interested in as I was acting was how I felt, how performance allowed me to connect with others and express my feelings. And when I think about it, it wasn't until I became a member of, it was an educational theater company called Good Clean Fun. And we basically, as a troupe of actors, we would go into different school settings like elementary schools, high schools, universities. And basically the schools would tell us the various issues, social issues that they were encountering, like bullying or date rape, suicide prevention, things of that sort, sexual harassment. And we would perform scenes around those issues, and we would stay in character. And right before the climactic moment, we would kind of open up to the audience. And just what I found as a person and as an actor was just how much performance is a tool for change and how much performance is a healing agent. So I did some research. I found the NYU drama therapy program, graduate program, went there, and just I knew that was the profession for me, to be a drama therapist. And so that was about, say, 11 years ago. So just working with vast array of populations, I found that, you know, creativity allows people to actualize their full potential. So now, although yes, I work in different clinical settings, I also really want to bring creativity and drama and play to the mainstream to really help people be able to reach their potential, actualize their goals, and that's the focus of my work now.
And Maria?
I want to pick up on Brooke's theme about the excitement that she feels engaging with people in thinking about accessing their sense of creativity. I would say that all of my clinical work the past 30 years has also been focused on that potential and helping people to access it. When I was a young professional actor in the city, I was working with a children's theater company, and we did some theater in some of the city hospitals on the pediatric unit. I did a Dr. Seuss play on a burn unit with some children and had a moment of epiphany around, this is what I want to be doing with the rest of my life. And at that point, I didn't even know that there was a name for drama therapy or that the creative arts therapies existed. but it was holding a very clammy hand of a kid whose hand was probably the only part of his body that hadn't been burned, that brought me into this idea of how could I make theater with people toward healing, and how could I make that a career? So like Brooke, who was my student, I found my way to NYU in the drama therapy program and have worked for 10 years, ran a drug and alcohol treatment program for people who had intellectual disabilities or traumatic brain injuries that prevented them from accessing the community-based substance abuse treatment services effectively. And we used a lot of creative therapeutic intervention there to help people begin their process of recovery. After that, I worked for 5 years for the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation with children of mothers who were getting substance abuse treatment, doing play therapy and drama therapy with those children. And I would say throughout my various experiences as a clinician and provider, that goal of helping people to access a sense of play, that when there's terror, when there's trauma, there is no play. And it's actually being able to access one's creativity and sense of play and playfulness that can potentially bring about change. And for us as drama therapists, we're very interested in helping people access change by broadening spontaneity, broadening a range of roles that people have access to in their lives, and helping people feel less stuck.
So please explain what creativity is. Brooke, are you born with it? Can you learn it? Does everyone have it?
Personally, I think we're all born creative beings. That's just my own belief. And there's a quote from the artist Picasso when he talks about how every child is an artist, but the problem is how we remain an artist once we grow up. So I think for me, children just can tap into their sense of play and imagination, and they don't censor at all. And it's just as adults, like Maria was saying before, that we could tend to feel more stuck and perhaps less vulnerable, because I feel like creativity is really about being vulnerable and showing up in life, putting our work out there, our thoughts out there. You know, when we do that as adults, it's, oh, will I be liked? You know, will I be accepted? And so there is sort of a fear attached perhaps to adults seeing themselves as creative or really embracing or expressing themselves creatively.
I just love what Brooke just said, though, about the idea of vulnerability. And I wanted to say that I agree with you, Brooke, that everyone's born with creativity. And I think it's evidenced in that most vulnerable of interactions, which is that those early interactions between a caregiver and an infant. When we witness that dynamic flow of communication that starts almost from the moment of birth between a caregiver and an infant, where there's, you know, oh, the baby's crying, and that the caregiver is anticipating, gee, is this cry about a wet diaper? Is this about hunger? This whole process that occurs in those beautiful early interactions between projections that get put on the baby, the potential identifications of the caregiver, it, the dynamism, that is a creative process. So creativity is developmental, and it's interpersonal. And I was also thinking about that idea that creativity is not limited also by intelligence. And I was remembering a lecture I saw many years ago by a graduate student in music therapy who was working in an institution for people with profound intellectual disabilities. And she was working with a man whose IQ was untestable, like 1 week old or something, if they could have tested it. But in the music therapy, she was a jazz pianist. She was improvising with him, and the scat singing that he was doing with her was so incredibly complex, rhythm, pitch, how he used the music. He was creating. So even somebody with an IQ that was unmeasurable was exhibiting these essential components of creativity, the ability for spontaneity, the ability for self-expression and expression of identity.
And is there a side to the brain which reflects this sense?
Right brain, definitely.
Right brain.
Although different creative tasks do call upon different sides of the brain.
And is there an actual science to the field of creativity?
There's been a lot of research about creativity. There's textbooks written about it. There's research happening. It's all over the place. There's a wonderful textbook on creativity by Mark Runko. It's been studied as a form of intelligence. Creativity's been divided into stages. Howard Gardner feels that creativity is implicit in how we learn. It's been studied as a cognitive process. And it's creative thinking is related to divergent thinking often, which is different than convergent thinking, which is the convergent thinking is what we need to take IQ tests or SATs, but divergent thinking is the kind of thinking that has us say, I'm going to make a list of all things that are circles or plants that grow in warm climates. It's that divergent thinking pulling from different sources of knowledge. That's the area where creativity seems to be related to the most.
Yeah, and I love what Maria just shared, absolutely. And I've found just through working with a variety of different populations, from children and autism and trauma and patients with cancer and traumatic brain injuries and depression, schizophrenia and mental illness, drug addiction, there seems to be sort of this pattern. I kind of connect it with the mythologist Joseph Campbell when he talks about the hero's journey and how that formula basically is seen in all pieces of literature and film, where there's like this hero and goes on the call to adventure. We can either, you know, answer the call, try something new in life, or refuse it. I've seen like every moment, every piece of the hero's journey in the people that I work with, that when they're about to embark on something creative, you know, they're moving from the unfamiliar, or they're moving from their familiar to something that they don't know. It takes risk. So it's interesting for me. I try to use that format and frame it in that way to the people I work with, that it really is about being on a journey and taking a risk and putting yourself in the belly of the whale and saying, you know what, it's okay. It's okay to explore something. And usually when that happens, we can become heroic. We can really be brave and learn how to master our fears and problems and then be able to go back to our known world and be able to say, hey, look, you know, look what I did, look what I overcame, and that's creativity. That's coming up with something new and original.
So, Brooke, if you think that everyone is born with this ability, what would some of the factors be that would change this as they grew older, or just have them not be able to access it?
Well, Maria shared earlier, and this is what I see frequently, and especially adults, is the feeling of stuckness, the feeling that they don't want to be vulnerable. They might have an idea, they might have a passion, and there's just such fear to it. And there's this great researcher, Dr. Brené Brown, and she talks about, you know, vulnerability is the birthplace of creativity and innovation. And so it's needed. And I think that is where most adults really get stuck. And so oftentimes they do reach out to someone like Maria or myself to say, how do I work through this? You know, how do I break through these blocks? Because now it's affecting my work. It's affecting my personal life. So I know that I have great potential. I know I have these great ideas. How do I be able to access it? How can I break through? So it really takes getting them open and for them to know that it's okay for them to be seen and witnessed and heard, and that's okay.
Are there gender differences in creativity, Maria?
They've been studied. They're being studied. There are different creative tasks call upon different parts of the brain. I don't actually know specifically about specific studies in terms of gender. I know that the studies are being done. I know that anecdotally we can talk about some, you know, but it's hard to get into those conversations, and I don't quite like to, because they're essentializing conversations. But how some of the gendered differences between men and women around women being anticipatory in their thinking and men being reactive in their thinking, but I think that's a sticky road or a rutted road that I may not want to go down.
Sure. So in a bullet point fashion, what is creativity good for? Brooke?
Well, I mean, I think it's essential for new ways of thinking, being innovative, thinking outside the box, bringing people together, like you said, morale, boosting, things of that nature. My husband, who's actually my business partner, he's in sort of the business and finance world, and he'll tell me, Brooke, you know, I go to workshops, conferences, even staff meetings, and it's all about creativity now. It's all about, it helps with leadership and connecting, and there's a focus on aesthetics and emotional intelligence, building emotional intelligence and raising morale and things of that nature. So, and to help with problem solving, I feel like it's essential now to thrive for people to have that creative mindset.
And Maria, is there any downside to being creative?
I think sometimes creative people can be marginalized in our culture and considered outsiders or outliers. We love creativity, and I think we admire it. We buy baby Mozart to play for our kids. And yet, at the same time, I think the creative kids, the kids who think differently, are often the ones who are bullied in schools. And over history, we could look at highly creative people, and their work was avant-garde. It was not always accepted at the time. And the people that create the Wagners and Beethovens, who move us from classical music into romanticism, you know, there was a lot of conflict around those changes. Innovation is not always embraced culturally. Sameness is.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it reminds me, there's a great TED Talk from, she's a social worker and researcher, Dr. Brené Brown, like I said earlier, and there's this great talk she gives about why our critics don't count, where she talks about, you know, stepping into the arena of our life and putting an idea out there and, in essence, being creative, and how she says shame, comparison, and scarcity pop up when adults are creative. So shame, she talks about, like, that little inner critic of, like, you're not enough, or then you get some kind of achievement, and then the inner critic is like, who do you think you are to be getting this or doing this? It's the ego. And when we're, you know, perhaps creative as adults, the comparison, well, I'm doing this, and she's doing something similar, so what am I doing that's original? You know, what am I bringing to the table? And then is my work, does it have value? Does it have purpose? So there's, like, all these limiting beliefs that pop up. I think she researched, like, 13,000 people and has all these, you know, the pieces of data that, unfortunately, that's what tends to come up for adults when they are being creative or they're in that process. So that is definitely a downside to work through.
I think back about growing up and how we all knew people who were just prodigies in their wheelhouse. They were fantastic photographers. They were great actors or actresses. They played piano beautifully. And yet the vast majority of them could not sustain or find or get work. So I'm wondering your thoughts about what happens when all of these people are teeming with creativity and yet they just can't pursue it to the end that they're looking for. Maria?
I think you're asking a larger question about, and obviously this discussion, we're talking about Western society in the U.S. We have to be specific about that because in other parts of the world, obviously, creativity is approached differently. But I would say here, not only do we undervalue creativity, but there aren't places for people to go who are creative as work, as a life choice. You know, how many people have kids in college and the kid is pursuing music and the parent is saying, oh my God, what am I going to do if my kid can't get a job? Should be taking maybe some accounting courses now and something that will be useful, having a useful skill. As a culture, we don't value art making and creativity. People who are creative find jobs in existing work, but we don't have jobs that celebrate creativity. We don't have community centers playing music. We don't ourselves, we're often limited in terms of our ability to access concerts, theater, ballet, modern dance. We often don't live in communities where the arts are valued. So people who are creative, that way of being in the world is undervalued.
Well, on both the local, state, and federal levels, the arts funding is being cut as we speak. So in terms of even allowing children the ability to pursue what they might want to, a lot of them don't even have the choice to even try it, correct?
That's right. There's a great TED Talk by Sir Ken Robinson about, you know, our schools killing creativity. And he really wants to reclaim creativity in our school systems, and bringing back, you know, the multiple different forms of intelligence and emotional intelligence and how important that is, because his whole talk was about it's reinforcing the school systems of math and science, exactly what Maria was saying, you know, go into accounting for the music major, but how necessary it is. And he gave this, like, wonderful story in the talk about how one mom, you know, had a child that was very anxious and kind of all over the place physically and getting up and active in class. And so the teacher encouraged the mom, oh, your child needs to go see a doctor, be on meds. And so when the doctor was speaking to the mother, the child was in another room, and the doctor was kind of astute to how kinesthetic this child was and really into her body, and so put some music on and said, you know, your child's a dancer. There's nothing wrong with your child, and so enroll her in dance class. And that's what she did, and she became, you know, this well-known choreographer for Broadway shows. So it needs to be valued. And there are companies that do value it, like Google and, you know, certainly Apple, where they take creativity and innovation and innovative thinkers with sort of technology and science and sort of someone who has a business mindset. It's just, it needs, we need to bring it more into the mainstream and say, no, there is a huge value for creativity.
That was going to be my next question. Moving into the 21st century, what are some of the ancillary fields where, if you have a particular bent for music or whatever, how can you bring that into the forefront and make money doing it? Now, you mentioned Google. Any other places like that?
Like I was mentioning earlier, just speaking to my husband, who's in sort of, you know, the government and finance business world, he said, no, they're seeking out, they're speakers that have similar training as Maria and I do, where really helping them be able to think innovatively. They do role play. What we're trained to do as drama therapists. And so, and he did even a certificate business program at Harvard, and this is the way that they went as well in their curriculum and really bringing some creative activities and into their curriculum. So I think there is a trend where people are, and different organizations are, and different sectors are looking at creativity as something as needed. I went on a cruise. It was an art therapy kind of conference last year, and there was a medical doctor turned, now he's formed his own business where he left that field, where he's using art now to, like, images of art to help businesses, high-end, you know, with CEOs, upper management, be able to look at images and how it evokes feelings and help them problem solve and things of that nature. So I really do see a trend where different sectors are employing the use of creativity.
I think we also see it a lot in younger people, who millennials, for example, who are starting their own businesses. And I also feel, while there isn't some formal governmental educational appreciation in that larger sense in terms of funding and valuing the arts and creativity, that that's not necessarily happening. What is happening generationally, and I think it's especially for millennials, especially for young people who came of age or were children during 9/11, where, you know, having the experience of the world, you know, here in the States, one of the first times, and of course happened at Oklahoma City too, where the community actually felt the world could fall apart in an instant. And I notice, as I'm teaching as a college professor, young people, there's an energy and a vitality now around, I'm not going to get that accounting degree. I am going to pursue what I want, because the world could end tomorrow. And there's a vigor and an excitement around innovation and creating, and I'm going to create my own web-based service, or I'm going to, I have this idea for something and I'm going to make it happen. I'm definitely in the students that I'm teaching seeing that more and more, and people who were once coming even into our program, our graduate program for clinical training, and then going on into very specific clinical, in your first and second years, often working in very specific clinical settings and acute care. Now people are taking their degrees, and a student who's been making therapeutic theater in Rhode Island around the opioid epidemic in Rhode Island, and not waiting to get the approval of the government, of some credentialing body that, yes, this, you're now ready to do the work, but people are just striking out on their own and saying, I know what I want to do now. I have this degree. I can be creative about how I want to go about doing it, and I don't have to play by the rules anymore. I can make up my rules.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with that. Just to piggyback off what Maria said, it was about 5 years ago that I started my own practice, being that I was a new mom and I have my third on the way. But one of the main reasons was to have that freedom and flexibility. And I agree that I feel like, you know, young people, young adults are looking for that. We want that freedom and flexibility. So becoming entrepreneurs is certainly the answer. And just organically, one of my friends, who's also a colleague, she's a fellow drama therapist, she was starting her practice. We engaged in a conversation. We had some peer supervision meetings. And she'd asked me, well, what are you doing, Brooke, that's working? You have a lot of clients. You know, you're partnering with different agencies and places and hospitals. And I said, well, I'm getting a lot of insight from my husband, who has this business mindset, and so I'm kind of learning from him, and she really encouraged me to form like a structure of like a workshop and class. And so although we didn't see ourselves as that time, you know, being experts, I still don't see ourselves being that, but we do know what's worked for us, what hasn't, and now it's led to lecturing you know, for Maria's students at NYU and in the drama therapy program, the art therapy program, graduate program, School of Visual Arts had us. It fills up the classes, the workshops, which is wonderful, because exactly what Maria mentioned, we know that we are valuable. We definitely have a lot of skills, being creative, having that mindset, and it's about serving. How can we serve? How can we connect? How can we connect with others and meet a need? And so I definitely see a lot of the people that have gone through our classes, you know, publish their books and fill their private practices and leave their full-time jobs and really have that freedom and flexibility. So it's wonderful to see success stories.
What you're saying, too, about that idea that it's no longer I have to meet this job, I can meet this need. It's a shift in thinking.
Yes.
I can meet a need. I don't have to meet the criteria for this job.
That's right.
We're nearly out of time, so I just want your very brief thoughts. If we had a crystal ball and we could look 50 years in the future, would there be a different approach to the science of creativity, or do you think that creativity would be so much different than we see it today? Maria?
I hope it will be different, and I don't know how. I think we're living at a time right now where I was having a conversation with a colleague earlier today. Everything the center cannot hold, you know, in our politics, everything is breaking up. And my hope is that in the future, we think about creativity and we think about play as the way to manage the mess and discomfort of the chaos of the world that we live in. And that's my hope, because I think in that there's, in our ability to play in the mess, there is hope. And I'm thinking about, there's a choreographer, Maurice Béjart, who said, you know, if you can play with something, you've achieved freedom. And I'm thinking right now, our ability to move forward as a country is about our ability to begin to tolerate all the difference that exists in the world, tolerate each other, begin to, you know, to play, to be creative, to step into each other's shoes, to see things from each other's perspectives, and not to come to conclusions about ourselves or each other or the world from it, but to just broaden our sense of perspective. And in doing so, that's where our survival, I think, hinges right now. I don't know, Brooke, what do you think?
It's also going to take some risk takers, which I feel like creativity does take risk. And so it's going to take people stepping out there and saying this is important, you know, like the Ken Robinsons. And there's this wonderful author of Big Magic, Elizabeth Gilbert, you know, talks about creativity, like Brené Brown, you know, getting up there, and her TED Talk goes viral about being vulnerable and wholehearted and how important it is to show up in life. And part of that definitely is connected with being creative. So I feel like it's going to take some thought leaders to step up and get up on a platform, really, and just whether it's through books or, you know, having dialogues like this, where it really reaches the mainstream to say, no, there's a value to this and it's important, and to hopefully shape people's thinking.
These are great final words. We've been talking with two women today about the intricacies and nuances of creativity, where it comes from, who has it, and how can you get and find it. Thank you so much, Brooke Campbell and Maria Hodymarska, for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Thank you to the listener for joining us. And until next time, I hope you take care.